Hey guys, welcome to episode 207 of the podcast as Boys of Summer continues. This is hopefully going to be satisfying to many of you because I had a lot of requests for this guest, and I have to agree, it was a long time coming and I'm delighted it worked out. We each recorded in our own worlds with our own equipment and merged the files together like magic. The wonderful, wonderful Mark Gagliardi. So I hope you enjoyed the episode. I'm a little behind on shout outs. I am just wrapping up the production here in Atlanta and I'm markedly less sick. So thanks to all of those of you who wished me a quick recovery. I can't say the recovery has been quick, but it is slowly happening. And that's it. I hope you enjoy the episode and I will talk to you next time.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I'm in a condo. I'm on the 20th floor, which in and of itself has been kind of a fun adventure with all the thunderstorms and stuff. There have been some touch and go moments where I've been real into it and then lightning has struck something very visible and close. And I've thought, do I love being on the 20th floor though? Do I?
Yeah. Let me get out of the way of this window.
Let me just move all of my things into this closet with no windows and just relax in an awkward and paranoid manner. No, but so you were recording and I wasn't, and that I'm bitterly disappointed in that, but you were saying that it's pouring rain to the point where even the subway starts to feel like you're outdoors.
Yeah. Yeah, the subway itself was flooding. You'd think 10 feet underground you would be safe, but nowhere is safe.
Is that, would they ever shut the subways down? Because, I mean, I like to think of a sort of tidal wave, like a deep impact style, just a rush of water.
Like, well, last time they shut it down.
Yeah.
Hurricane Sandy was that.
Oh, sure it was.
And the R train, which goes to the lowest point, from the lowest point in Brooklyn to the lowest point in Manhattan underground, just completely filled with water during Hurricane Sandy.
So crazy.
Yeah. So it took them a year to fix that.
That's so crazy.
Which, yeah. Oh, well. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm very ready. I'm very ready. I'm
good.
Recording. It's hard.
I'm
it's
so
hard
excited.
To say where we should even start because I have no. I don't know. I just don't have a natural introduction to the opening of the podcast. I do a little intro in advance, and so
right. the pre-roll.
All of this,
and then
yeah.
The song.
All of this is. Right. I would say this right now. Like right now, people probably are already listening. Right.
Oh.
Now.
Oh well, hello, people who are listening.
You have to get
I feel
all
weird. Like,
suddenly
I feel like
your whole personality changes, your voice changes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, allow me to
hello,
put on my podcasting voice.
Did I do that?
Not at all. Not at all.
Oh, God.
Not
now I'm self-conscious that I'm like just chatting with you and then like, oh, it's time to record. All right.
No, you just have a natural voice for radio, which you already know, I'm sure. It's a wonderful
and
voice.
And you have a natural voice for podcasting.
Thank you so much.
It's so inviting
much.
And wonderful and lovely.
I like to think of my voice as a audio hug. I don't know that that's the case or that I've ever said that before or ever will again, but there it just rolled out, just tripped off the lips. Somebody's
Yelp review is about to get audio hug added to it.
You know what? Someone did say that. Oh, my God. I just stole someone's quote. That is exactly what it is. It was an iTunes review that said, this podcast is like listening to a hug.
That is such a great
ripped
review.
Someone off. I ripped off a wonderful listener and pretended like I had thought of it. I apologize. Listen, I apologize from the bottom of my heart. This is
you
going
just
very
paid
poorly.
A compliment forward. But you paid it forward to the person it was originally intended for anyway.
Does that make it a full circle? Is that a loop? Is that a time loop? Are we traveling in time right now?
I hope if we are, we're going forward in time. Otherwise, our computers will stop working.
Oh, that's a really good point. Were you one of those people that believed that that we would lose technology when the clocks rolled over into? I mean, I guess we did have some weird stuff happen, but were you like a 12:31:99 freaker outer?
That was. Did you hear that thunder that just happened? By the way,
no,
it was really loud thunder.
I hope
like
the listener
as you
did.
Said that,
foreboding.
As you said that, a big thunderclap. Yeah. A little bit, only because I'd heard lots of conspiracy theories my whole life. Like there was the Mayan 2012 thing. There were all these different stories about when the world was going to end. And this wasn't a doomsday, this is when the world is going to end sort of thing. This is like this is a practical thing that we didn't think of that might screw up a lot of technology and a lot of things.
Yeah.
So it felt more real. Like that was a thing that could actually possibly happen.
Yeah, that's like, that's what like techie nerds can be afraid of who don't believe in anything else scary.
Exactly. Yeah, that is their hell, and that's why they're good people in life.
That's right. That's right. But something right? Didn't something happen? Didn't a couple things go a little bit hinky, and it was enough that people were able to point to it and be like, well, my oven did stop working for 2 days. Like I feel like there were a couple things. There were a couple things that were bigger
things
than that. But yeah, there were minimal things.
But I don't know. I always felt like they got it right. Whoever the scientists were that were working on it, like.
Oh.
Everybody,
they were able to preempt.
Yeah, like January 1st happened and people were like, those scientists were so dumb. Nothing happened. I was like, well, maybe nothing happened because the scientists aren't dumb and they fixed it.
Yeah. Also, I love that there's just a group of scientists working in a room somewhere on that problem.
As the clock is ticking down, everyone's watching the ball drop.
Exactly. Sweat is pouring off of their lab coats.
At 11:59, someone went, wait a minute, guys, just make it 4 digits instead of 2. And the whole world was saved.
I want that to be true. I really do.
I hope it is.
Did you have, and when you had kind of heard all those different theories, did you have a sort of love of the kind of supernatural or the sort of longing for maybe not obviously Armageddon is kind of the end of the world is a little bit drastic, but did you kind of want those mystics to be right, or were you a very practical kid who was more like, that's not real?
I both wanted it to be true and didn't want it to be true because I like to believe in the supernatural. I was raised Catholic. And the thing that always weirded me out the most as a kid was not, death and heaven and hell. It was the idea of eternity. Because as a kid, I was deathly afraid that I would get bored in eternity.
Understandable.
Like eternity is a really, really long time. And I remember sitting in my room as a kid and I, went to Catholic school and we were taught that was you went to heaven and it's bliss for all eternity. And as a kid, I was like, that feels like I don't know what I'm going to do forever. My mind couldn't grasp forever. So the concept of being around forever terrified me.
Yeah. did you... like how did your relationship with Catholicism evolve if in fact it did, which I imagine it probably did,
did
as you got older? Where were you in your teenage years with your relationship to that?
I was very much a pretty firm believer growing up. I was always a guy who believed in the good parts, and like, I was never a hell guy, is that a weird thing to say?
I love it. No, I understand exactly what you mean. You weren't marching around with a sign going like, y'all gonna burn in hell.
Right. No, but I liked the teachings and the community of it. We had, when I was in high school, I used to run Catholic retreats. As a high schooler,
where was this, by the way? I've been an irresponsible host and not determined for the listener where you were a teenager.
I was born and raised in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah, you were.
Which is the east end of Tennessee, where the University of Tennessee is. So it was, and we took pride in the fact that during the Civil War, we tried to do what West Virginia did, only we were unsuccessful, which is break away from the rest of the state so as to not have to be Confederate.
I mean, that's a point. I see that being a point of pride for sure.
That was a point of pride. So I was born and raised in Knoxville, and there weren't a lot of Catholics in Knoxville. There were really only two Catholic churches that were big. So that was the community. Like, we knew every Catholic teenager in the district when I was in high school.
And did you was your school also Catholic, or no? It was a public school?
No. My grade school was Catholic. I did 8 years of Catholic grade school where there was like 60 kids per grade. And then high school, I went to the big public high school. There were about 500 kids per grade.
Yeah. And you knew every single Catholic teenager.
I knew every Catholic teenager because most of us had gone to that same Catholic elementary school together. So I'd known everyone from the time that, you know, we picked the one kid to pick on when we were like 7. And then that kid turned out cool later. And, you know, so it was like you saw everybody's ebbs and flows and we all knew each other pretty intimately. So it made those retreats really comfortable. Also, those retreats were held at the church of the school that I had gone to as a kid. So coming back to that building when I was in high school and running these things, it just felt good. And the priest that we had was great. He was like 22 and he wore Tevas and just the little purple scarf. He wasn't like a, black shirt, white collar, black pants kind of priest.
He's a hip priest.
He was a hip, what do they call him? Order priests. Like, the Jesuits are cool. The Paulists are cool. It's the ones that are in like the diocesan hierarchy that eventually made me leave the church.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do. Well, that sounds like good, clean teenage living right there.
Yeah.
Did you?
I mean, we all would make out, of course.
Well, you know what? I'm interested in that because that's, I mean, I don't know how much I've gone into this on the podcast. Hopefully I've gone into it enough that people remember who've listened to a lot of episodes. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of an interesting twist to Mormonism, which was like the Mormon church that I had to go to as a teenager because my mom had custody of me on Sundays, to my knowledge, at least within my age group, very clean cut. I think there was some business happening maybe with some of the older teenagers, but I felt like I had a really, really straight laced kind of age group of kids that I was exposed to on Sundays, the sweetest people, but I definitely felt like I was the black sheep. I absolutely was a black sheep. I mean, I was doing all kinds of stuff I wasn't supposed to be because I just wasn't an active member of the church, despite the fact that I had to go to church whenever I was in town, you know, with my mom.
And were you public school during the week?
I was public school. Yeah, I was public school. Yeah. And my whole life was sort of atheistic except for going to church with my mom and having I enjoyed the sense of community. You know, I liked the people very much. I wasn't one of those kids that was, you know, a teenager who was like, fuck all of you, you know, I hate being here.
Right.
I was like, no, you guys are all so nice. This is fun. You don't know that I've done LSD.
You can find that. Yeah, and you didn't have to tell them. Did any of them know? Did you have anyone in there that you revealed it to?
No, because my mom lived in a different area than my dad, and I went to high school near where my dad lived, and I went to church where my mom lived, and no one from that church went to my school. So I had no interaction whatsoever with those teenagers except I was a year older in school than all of the kids my age in church. So they would have been a year behind me anyway. But when I went to like a family camp, like a retreat, right? Like a Mormon retreat where these Mormons were being shipped in with their families from all over. That was like make out central. I mean, it was the epitome of like clean living kids, like getting into a ton of trouble. And so you never know. Cause you know, I've talked to a lot of people like, you know, Jackson did not fall into the category of, oh, you know, we were kind of messing around even though we were good kids going on a retreat. Like, I think it was very straight laced.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, listen, that's kind of sexy.
that Jackson was such a good...
No! Oh, listen, Jackson's sexy no matter what, but so are you.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm talking about listen, I know that we're both good people because we're both here at this retreat, so if my hand accidentally is on your boob, I mean, mm-hmm. it's not like I'm a bad guy.
Right. We're good people by nature of the fact that we're here.
That's right.
I had two very distinct... Well, I had lots of very distinct friend groups. I was a floater. But I had the church friends, but I also had my theater club drama friends from high school. And those were the ones that was all of the hedonism mm-hmm. was there.
Yeah.
In that. And we would do these competitions on weekends, and many of them were sleepaway. Like you mentioned with the church retreats. This is schools from all over. And we knew I knew girls that I only knew from other schools. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? We're going to definitely see these people at this conference, and we're going to see these people at this competition. So that was when, all bets were off.
I mean, I feel like at that age, in an environment like that, even in junior high, going to a student council retreat, something about being in a different city with people who aren't from your school, with people who are from different schools, would bring out this reckless abandon in people that I would never see before or after. There was just this sort of, and I remember when I talk about it with you, I can actually mm-hmm. feel my pulse quicken, and I can kind of feel a lump in my throat of excitement, because there was this it was this wide open field of we're a bunch of people who don't know each other, staying in hotel rooms away from our parents, this,
which feels
is
so grown
crazy.
Up
crazy yeah. And it was just, I just remember feeling amped, like hormone amped. And I wasn't out there. I wasn't a 13-year-old having sex or anything like that. I barely even mm-hmm. Held anyone's hand for a big chunk of my adolescence. But the idea that it could happen was the overwhelming thought in my mind. You know what I mean?
Right. I guess it was... biologically, you mentioned hormones. I wonder if it was there were just pheromones in your air that you weren't used to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So your body's who are you?
was your theater club? What was that, just part of school that was a class? Was it sixth period, or was it something that met after school, or both?
The way ours worked was there were two different acting classes, which is great for a public school to have.
Yeah.
They had intro to acting. And when you passed intro to acting, you could take advanced acting. And once you got to advanced acting, you never left until you graduated.
I guess that was true for me, too. So I think I did the same. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was always the people who would try theater as their arts elective. But then there was that core group. And we were the ones that would, we'd be in the theater until 2 a.m. Building sets.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably my most close-knit community. And I'm still really close with a lot of those guys, which I think is a testament to our two teachers. One of our teachers got booted before my senior year. So we had a different teacher my senior year. The
was there a
acting
reason
teacher
for that?
Was.
Was there a salacious fun reason, or was it? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know.
This
I
is like. Yeah, I know. Well, this is several years on, and he's got a career now and is fine, and I won't use any names, but he liked to do this thing. He was very into his Scottish heritage. And so,
I don't know where this is going, and I'm already so excited.
Every year when there would be the final. The final state, the big state competition, and it was always a hotel thing, he would get all of the seniors and all of the juniors, the core people that had been there the longest, and he would – this is really terrible. He would do an out with the old, in with the new Scotch toast.
Oh.
And he would – and
oh
he
my.
Gathered everybody, yeah, in the suite, and everybody would sort of sit, and he would do this – he would make this big, elaborate speech, and then everybody would go around and talk about their feelings and who they were as people and how far they had come and welcome the new crop in. And then, unfortunately, in the eyes of the school board, the next step was problematic, where he – everybody had a red Solo cup with a tiny sip of scotch in it.
I mean, that's not even like prancing around like the border of the rules where, you know, could maybe try and argue. I mean, that is just beyond overstepping anything. How long did he think he was going to get away with that? And by the way, I love everything about what it sounds like he did, except for that there was no way that that wasn't going to land him out of a job.
Right. He had faith in his students not making a big deal out of it.
Mm-hmm. Was he young?
He was very young. He was like 24, 25.
Yeah, so he was like, you guys are like me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there were a couple of students who took umbrage with it. And they went to the school administration. There were other factors that there were sort of personal vendettas involved. And we had sort of two camps formed, a very small, yeah, screw this guy camp, and a much larger loyal camp.
Yeah.
Who had seen all the good that he'd done. And it was one of those moments. I had a really weird moment because of this. My best friend growing up, Brandon Carroll, went to a different school than me. When we went to different high schools, but his father was our vice principal at my high school. And so I had grown up with Brandon's dad, like going and, you know, spending the night at his house, like sure. All kids do, and staying up late and watching movies and eating a 3-pound bag of M&Ms and that kind of stuff. You know, so he'd known me since I was really small, and he pulled me aside in the hallway one day. He said, "Mark, can I talk to you?" I said, "Yes, sir, Mr. Carroll. I'm sure you've heard rumblings of what's been going on. Do you know anything about this teacher giving alcohol to students?"
Oh, no.
And I said,
"He McCarthyismed you."
He McCarthyismed me. And I said, "Mr. Carroll, I don't know what you're talking about."
Yeah.
And he said, "Mark, I've known you your whole life." And I understand the loyalty that a player feels for his coach.
Hmm.
"So I'll ask you again. Are you aware of any alcohol being given to students?" And I said, "Mr. Carroll, I don't know what you're talking about." And knowing full well that I knew exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah.
He just gave me a smile and a nod and said, "Okay," and walked away. Phew. And we never spoke about it again. Yeah.
Oh, good. Good. I was afraid that the story was going to be like, "And then I got suspended for not telling," you know.
Right.
Like,
No. Like, Mr. Carroll and I were cool. Like, he was like, "All right, I've got enough." He's like, "I got enough people who are, you know, I got enough people who have talked about it. I'm not going to make you do it."
Right.
You know what I mean?
Did you, when you were talking about the two camps, did you have... and by the way, I'll preface this by saying I'll be very surprised if the answer is yes, because you're just not you're certainly not this person now, and there's nothing wrong with being this person. But did you have like tempestuous sort of falling outs with people? Did you have, because that was purely, you know, people who disagreed with what that teacher had done and stuff. But did you have any of that kind of like teenage drama of like, "I don't know, my friend's mad at me. I don't know why." Because I imagine I just feel like you're just not someone who attracts that kind of energy ever.
Yeah, I avoided all of that. I try to be, I guess, diplomatic to a fault, because it has, you know, like some people really pride themselves on loyalty, and I do to a degree, but I also try to see both sides of a thing. So I'm like, I get it. They were uncomfortable with this. Technically, it was very against the rules. I tried to see both sides of it. And the teacher that came in the next year was very good.
Yeah.
We all embraced him quickly.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Is that the way your family kind of conducts itself? How big is your family? And did you play that role in your family, or did you have the kind of family where there wasn't much conflict anyway?
No, my family,
that was
we never
questions.
Really had much conflict. That yeah. We never really had much conflict. But I wound up, my parents split up when I was 17. And the day that it happened, the day that the pot boiled over, my sister had palm squad practice and my brother had football practice. And I guess paid the price for not being as athletic as them. So I was the only one who came home from school at 3:30. They were there long into the evening. And when I got home, the pot had boiled over. And I found myself for the next probably decade being the liaison voice of reason go-between the two of them.
Interesting.
Like, even to the point where at my brother's wedding, they were in two different rooms during the rehearsal dinner. And I had appetizer with one, entree with the other, dessert with one,
wow.
Coffee with the other.
Wow.
Like, yeah, that was my task at my brother's wedding.
And to that point, and I don't want to, violate your parents' privacy, but mm-hmm. was that enough? That sounds like it was a situation even with that where you were like, I can see where my mom's coming from. I can see where my dad's coming from. I'm not going to make either one of them the bad guy in this scenario.
Exactly.
Did they have, I hope that they, so I guess they haven't become friendly.
Oh, no.
That's hard, man.
It's tough, yeah.
Especially hard for someone like you who doesn't, who doesn't love conflict and who can see both sides of any situation to feel like it's so hard when it's a situation where there was love once and that that it's still painful enough for one or both parties that there's residual stuff there opposed to like, well we made the decision. I mean, like my parents stayed very, very friendly. I think they were both really sad that their marriage didn't work out, but but I think it was more sadness that then kind of morphed into friendliness. And it's funny because, like, considering that my parents were so friendly growing up, I still couldn't fathom how they ever had gotten together in the first place because I was so little I didn't have any memories of them. but it was nice to sort of see like so here I have the opposite kind of situation where I'm looking at two parents who are really have a great amicable relationship and I'm still like, how did you ever live in the same house? You're so different. But to have your parents stay together up through until the time you're almost an adult and know what that life is like under one roof, and then have them separate, you just hope so much with two people that you love that they'll get to a point where each of their lives is better without the other, to the point where they can forgive and be friendly. You know, it's hard,
right? And they both do have wonderful lives now. They've both remarried and are very happily married. I don't call their spouses my stepmom and stepdad because, like, I was an adult when it happened, so
yeah.
I never grew up in the house with them. But they're very happy and still cannot be in the same room as each other. But it really is like I had the same thought in retrospect years later. I was like, yeah, you know, come to think of it, they really would have been a terrible match. But
and
somehow me, my brother and sister, you know, we came out of it.
Yeah.
So there was some good.
Did you ever get in trouble with them when you were doing these various things, or did you anything that you were doing that they might not approve of was overshadowed by them not knowing because you were doing lots of good things and you were a good kid?
I was a pretty good kid, but any like all the bad stuff. I had a friend who his mother thought that I was a bad influence on him. And my mother thought that he was a bad influence on me. So we were just terrible influences on each other and blamed each other to our own parents. And so that relationship worked out great.
I can't tell you.
Did you really?
I cannot tell you how much I understand that. Fully, fully understand that. Yeah.
It was Matt's idea. And he's saying, it was Mark's idea.
When you got in trouble, so what would it have been? I mean, was it like we shouldn't have TP'd that person's house? Or was it like we just stayed out really late? Or, you know, I did drink something or whatever?
Yeah, we would just, I never got, the only thing I ever got grounded for was grades. But like,
were you not a great
stuff
student?
Like that? No, I was a great student. But if I got a C, I was grounded for 6 weeks.
Oh my God.
So,
Gags,
yeah.
That's dramatic.
Yeah, it was tough. Especially, what I got grounded from was the worst. I wasn't allowed to do the play that semester. So like that was my grounding, which is cold to do to an
actor,
right? That's
strict. That's really strict. Yeah. What do you remember what you got the C in? Was it emotional enough that you have that memory seared in your mind?
Oh yeah. It was I got a C in pre-calculus.
Ew, why did you have to take pre-calculus?
I don't know.
I was out by algebra 2, dude.
Really? I don't know. They required it in my school. You had to have a certain number of math things. And I'd done algebra in the eighth grade, so I had to do like the next progressive steps through high school. And you have to take at least three, so that was the next step.
Somehow I was in a math class every single year, and I can't explain that because I never flunked or had to take a math class again, but somehow I never had to take trigonometry. So I don't know. I remember taking pre-algebra in seventh grade. I remember taking algebra in eighth grade. I remember taking geometry in freshman year. Everything else is a blur. Mm-hmm. Everything else I just call algebra.
Any math is algebra.
I don't know. I can't explain it.
Math to me is one of those things that I can't, kudos to whoever understands it and has the logic brain to do it. I am not that person.
Yeah.
But I distinctly remember the night that I got that C, because my dad is a very bombastic guy, and he was being very calm and telling me why he was going to ground me. And my response to that, because I'm, 16, 17 and they were still together at the time. So we were all still in the same house. And I didn't know how to process emotions. So this sort of fear and dejection and humiliation of this manifested itself in the worst possible way, which was laughing. And my dad went from very calm to mad really quickly. And I was like, I couldn't, I didn't have the wherewithal to be like, no, this is just my response to feeling this way because I don't understand emotions yet.
Right.
Yeah, I am awkward.
When you say that you couldn't process emotions, my first thought as a former teenage girl was, how did that play into your dating life? Or were you able to process your emotions when it came to girls that you had crushes on or long relationships?
No, I never had long relationships in high school. I was a permanent ducky in high school. Because I guess of the, being diplomatic and wanting to try to empathize and, you're going out with this guy. I'll help you pick an outfit. Sure. So I became friends with every girl that I had a crush on.
Yeah.
And then eventually I would muster up the courage to tell them that I had a crush on them. And they would all end that conversation with, "That's really sweet, but..."
Yeah, that's so hard.
Yeah, so it was tough, but
that's hard. Yeah. And that is really does seem like an age where so often having that friendship, like this wonderful relationship, like everything you're told about the idea of relationships, like it's great to be friends first and like let the relationship move at its own pace and all of this kind of garbage, which by the way is not garbage at all. But when you're a teenager, but like because of all of those previously mentioned hormones, so often, and it went both ways, and it went, obviously, and from our era, even harder being gay, right? Because then you really don't know what you can say and when. It was hard enough being straight. I can't, the idea of just being like fully and completely gay and knowing it and not being able to feel like you could address that would just be shattering. But yeah, it just seemed like I had the same thing where I would have a crush on someone that was a friend, and by the time I got around to saying anything, they only saw me as a friend. It was like if I had just been some mean girl who didn't pay attention to them, then I would have stood a chance, which is so confusing. Mm-hmm. And then it would happen to me on the other side where a guy friend of mine would say something and I would hate that I didn't have feelings for him because I knew what it felt like to be that person, and still I couldn't manufacture something I didn't feel. So it was just kind of happening in all different directions to everybody. And it was so confusing.
Yeah. It's good that you had both sides of it so you could deal with it, though. So you knew what, like, you knew what would work and what wouldn't, and what would get a message through and what wouldn't.
I guess.
You know what I mean?
I don't, yeah, I mean, I do. I mean, on paper, I would say that's true, but I still remember everything just feeling messy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, there, and I guess I had it on that other side as well, that there were girls that would be interested in me and I just wouldn't be interested in them. But there was never a moment. I never had that version of it. I never had to be the one to break it to a person.
Right.
So I guess I lucked out, or I don't know. I'll tell you one way not to deal with telling a friend crush that you liked them, that I tried nearly every time.
Oh.
And it was just more work than it needed to be, which was writing them a song. Oh, I wrote so many songs. Yeah. So bad. And I actually,
I think I knew that. I seem to remember like some, I almost feel like I remember you making a joke about that or someone making a joke about that. And this would have been like a couple years ago, just in passing. Uh-huh. And I remember thinking like, oh, I got to get into that. Did you play the guitar for them or play the piano sing?
Well,
it?
I would.
Or did they all sound similar to one another?
Okay, this is a terrible confession to make. I recycled one once and just changed a few words.
Good for you.
Because this went on into college, I used a high school one on a college girl.
How were they different from one another?
The songs?
Do you remember any of them?
They were all basically the same theme, which was, I know we're friends, but I really like you, and this is the only way I know how to tell you. They all had the exact same theme.
And it never worked.
It never worked. Not once. But I kept trying.
Oh, that is so adorable. Oh, it's so adorable and wonderful. Oh, it's great.
And the song
great.
And the lyrics
would
were
the song always,
always so...
have their name in it? Like, would you rhyme something with their name?
Oh, no. It would just have details about moments that we had shared. So that was tough to, like, try and rework the rhymes to be the same. You know what I mean? How do I make that trip to the laundromat where I rhyme the word wash? How do I make that about our bicycle ride?
Oh God.
You know what I mean?
My heart is breaking. Oh, I love it so much. Do you have any of them written down somewhere? Like I would pay a studio to be the producer of an album. That you recorded, even if I was the only person with the only copy,
oh my God.
Professional sounding album of all of these songs.
I think I have all of them written down. I may even still have recordings of all of them.
Oh God, I love this.
I'll send them along to you.
Oh God, it's just darling. Did you ever?
It was. We never worked though. Yeah, that's
I
the
know,
problem, Janet.
It, but
is it was
it's
like,
so much
oh,
more
that's
adorable.
That
it didn't work. It's so much more adorable that it didn't work.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. The worst.
Well, what about when you finally did start dating? Would you write songs for those people? Because then you would be sure. It didn't have to be a song about how you wanted to tell them but didn't know how to, because you would have already made the deal.
Mm-hmm. Once I was in a thing, and I never really had a girlfriend. I mean, there was a girl in eighth grade that I was like, "Will you go with me?" And she was like, "Yeah." And we held hands for like 2 weeks, but that's not
counts.
You know
that counts.
That counts. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was my first. But then like I guess I've always been a fan of these idyllic, like romantic comedy moments that mm-hmm. only exist in fiction that if you try to do them in real life come across as really terribly awkward. So any like organic, real relationship that I had, I would write songs in those just as like, you know, for like an anniversary present or or a month anniversary because this was, you know, school.
Okay, wait, and I forgot to clarify how you would deliver these songs, like with instruments, etc.
Oh, so well, it varied. A couple of times, I just had the guitar with me, and I would like, I muster up the courage to say something, and like I would like find that moment. I'd be like, I'm gonna do it this week.
Would you have memorized the song, or would you take out like a folded piece of paper and be looking?
Oh
at
no,
it?
I'd always pull out a piece of paper. Okay. I'd never have it memorized. Yeah. Okay. I wasn't crazy. But yeah, and then, but on a couple of occasions, because I had a keyboard when I was a kid, on a couple of occasions, I would, and I had a four-track machine, one of those little cassette tape four tracks. I would record and play the song, and then I would overlay violins on top. Yeah. Oh, I would make like elaborate productions sometimes. Yeah, depending on how much I felt for the girl and whether or not I thought I would be able to get through the song.
Wait, were you playing the violins?
No. I was playing it on the keyboard. I would set the keyboard to the violin setting. I just remembered.
Okay, so the synthesizer.
If you want me to do it, I can remember the chorus to the song.
Need you ask? You that, don't need to ask, please.
That I sang for, this is the one I use on two different people. And it's terrible because this was my relationship with both of them.
It would make sense that would be right. The words that you remembered since you.
and by the way, the third line of this is a complete lie. Is a complete lie. It goes, oh my God, I can't believe I'm about to sing this. This is so embarrassing.
I love you. I love you. Thank you for doing this.
It was, we never had a fairy tale, but what we had was real. I never wrote a song for you, but I told you how I feel. I know this is the real you, not some idea I dreamed of. We never had romance, but we had love. That was the chorus. And the thing is like...
But wait, you did write a song for
exactly.
her.
Exactly.
That was sort of a wink.
There's two lies in it. That's the first. And the other is the, I know this is the real you, not some idea I dreamed of, because it was always some idea of this girl that I had dreamed of.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it was.
It was never, yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. I haven't sung that song in a very long time, Janet Varney.
Mark, are you trying to tell me something?
Look, here's the thing.
Because I love you as a friend, but I really like your current girlfriend. I just don't feel right about this on a number of levels.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's part of it. I do currently have a girlfriend that I love. But here's the thing, Janet. I wrote you this song.
The song is called I Never Wrote You a Song.
Yeah, I wrote this for Wait, you what? 10 years How? Before I met you.
Oh, here's man.
Here's the song that I wrote for you.
Yeah, this got good.
Dear Laura.
I love it. Did your friends know that you were doing this? Like, did your male friends know?
A couple
like,
of them did.
Maybe don't write another song, dude.
A couple of them knew about it, and all of them told me it was a terrible idea. But I was like, no, man, this time it's going to work.
Not this time? Oh.
Yeah.
That's like the teenage equivalent of like Elizabeth Taylor's marriages, where someone is like, why does she think that this one is the one? And then at the same time, you're like, you know what? I admire her chutzpah.
Yeah.
I admire that she believes that it's just hasn't been the right one and the right time yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's
to be
an optimist. And I like that about Elizabeth Taylor.
That's what, you know, listen, don't be afraid to write a song about
right?
her.
Oh, no.
Do not be afraid to write
Look,
a song about
Elizabeth,
her.
Look, Elizabeth, I told myself I was going to do this week. I psyched myself up, so I have to. Just, I just need you to sit there and listen.
Oh, God. So good. What kind of music what did you listen to? Were you a big theater nerd? Like, did you love the soundtracks to musicals?
Yeah, I was a big Broadway nerd.
Or were you loving Top 40 or... Yeah,
I listened to a lot of Top 40 music. I would just because, you know, you'd listen to what was on the radio because everybody would sing it in school and you wanted to be cool. I say you, that's right. Generalizing. I would listen to Top 40 radio and I wanted to be cool, so I would learn the songs. But most of my music collection was, you know, Miss Saigon, Les Mis, Phantom, Cats, Crazy for You. These were the CDs that I wore out. Little Shop of Horrors.
Sure. Yeah.
That's
Broadway all the way.
Yeah, it was sort of a golden age of Broadway too when I grew up. It was like the age of the mega hit. These mega hits that would last forever and ever and ever.
Was Knoxville you sort of have Nashville and you have this kind of the a lot of like really real professional artistic production happening in that corner of the world. Was that something that you felt an awareness of in Knoxville too?
Yeah, I, well,
where there was like, oh yeah, this is like, there's a ton of musicians in Tennessee and they're doing their thing and they're following their dream. And did you have a any kind of appreciation for country music?
That's more of a Nashville game. Knoxville was, we had a lot of bluegrass in Knoxville, but my
even better.
Family never listened to bluegrass music. So I just never listened to bluegrass music. But I did as I got older and had a real appreciation for it. But we were kind of a, as far as theater went, we were a road town. Like we would get the big national tours would come through our town and play for a week. And then they would move on to the next stop. So every big musical that I saw growing up, I saw the national tour of it come through Knoxville. But I also grew up doing plays, outside of school, and we have this beautiful old theater in Knoxville called the Bijou that is on the National Registry of Historic Places. It was a vaudeville house. W.C. Fields played there and the Marx Brothers and the Three Stooges. It was a historic spot. And that's where I grew up doing plays. So theater for me as a kid, I was, aside from the road shows, I was less a consumer of it and more a willing participant in it.
Right, right. So that's another thing too, right? You said you were a floater, but that's if you're doing theater where it's not just kids and it's sort of adults,
right?
Where you would you play like the kid part
exactly.
in a show?
I was the kid and the nerd.
I wished I had done that. Yeah,
it was a lot of fun. It was
that's cool too because you kind of get treated like an equal sooner than a lot of kids do. I think when you're doing stuff like that.
Yeah, that was nice, and everyone at school knew that I was the kid that did plays outside of school. You know what I mean? So whereas a lot of the theater kids would get sort of eyeballed sideways. I guess a lot of people knew that they're like, no, he wants to do this. He wants to do this for a living. So let him slide. Also, my brother was on the football team and I knew all the linemen, so I wasn't ever going to get picked on, which was nice.
That is handy. Yeah. It's hard to know how that's going to go sometimes, because sometimes if you aren't athletic but you have a sibling who is, it seems like sometimes it's the opposite and it's like extra bullying because, well, maybe not. It seems like that could be possible. That
I never was the victim of bullying because my brother has a great head on his shoulders and always has. And he was on the offensive line and the friends that he surrounded himself with were like-minded, just good dudes. So they weren't the ones doing the bullying in the school. You know, normally, I guess like the cliche is the big football players are the bullies. And they're like, no, these guys were just nice dudes who were big and played football and had my back.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
Yeah. I don't know who was bullying in my high school. Now when I think about it, I mean, I have a sense of it when I was being bullied, like when I was younger. But my school was so big and I was so not a part of anything organized to the degree where I would know that was going on. You know what I mean? Like there wasn't any in the world that I was a part of. And so I just don't even remember having an awareness.
You were never
it.
The
maybe my school was bully free.
Yeah, right.
That can't be true.
So you were you. What was your bullied period? You never had a bully period, I assume.
No. I got it the worst in like grades 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
And then 7, 8. I was being bullied more by like mean guys.
Mm-hmm.
But like in a really bad way, not in like a like, oh, they must like you, like in a way where I would get like pushed down in the hall for reasons I didn't understand. Ugh, you know what I mean? Like they get the wind knocked out of me.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like
that kind of stuff.
It wasn't
just,
like, no, he pulled my pigtails.
Yeah. That it just seems so. It's so dumb and impractical. It's like, all you're doing, you're just, there's no reason. You're just making her late for class and knocking the wind out of this nice person for no reason. Like it.
I just think, I mean, that maybe that's the kind of some of that is the beginnings of not knowing how to deal with your feelings, mm-hmm. right? And not knowing how to deal with hormones and all that. Just feeling like, I mean, that's I guess, a whole separate conversation. And I got to get into this MASH game that most assuredly will not be about bullies. Let me get into this MASH game. Let me ask you some gags related questions.
I'm very excited
that I hope
about
you'll
this.
Enjoy. let's do first category is three musicals that are actually real places and lives and worlds. So it's not up on a stage. It's existing somewhere in the universe. And you can jump into it. And it doesn't mean that you are one of the characters. It just means that you get to go be with those characters in that world. Three.
Okay. Two of them for very similar reasons. Rent and Hair.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love that Great. Sort of... We're all in this. We're all artists in this together. Romantic notion.
Yeah. Yep.
And Hair and Rent both have that. So Rent, you know, New York City, 1968, with all the hippies having a big yeah. B in together. I guess both New York City, both of those stories.
Yeah.
I love that. A third musical that. I guess Tin Types. Do you know the musical Tin Types?
I don't. I don't think.
It takes place. It's similar to Ragtime. It takes place around the turn of the century. And one of the characters
that's
a through line in, or maybe like the, you know, aughts or 19-teens, early 20th century. One of the characters in that is a sort of Chaplin-esque silent film character. And it deals, and that mm-hmm. play deals
oh,
with
that's
the,
great. Yeah,
the characters in this are Harry Houdini and would it have been Susan B. Anthony then? Like there was a suffragette. I don't remember which one it was at this point. But like these were the like cool revolutionary, I guess. Yeah. Revolution in musicals to me is fun.
Absolutely. That's great.
And those are the worlds
That's
I'd like
great.
To live in.
You wrap up all that passion. Well, stories like that, too, then it starts to feel like it makes sense to burst into song somehow.
Right.
Because the emotions are so strong. And it's harder when it's like a musical that's not about something really intense, because then it sort of stands out more when there's a musical number for no that, like
right.
you're kind of like, I don't want. I guess now I'm being too analytical. I'm wondering why they're singing right now. And the best musicals that, you know, it feels like not only does it make sense, but like there's like with you and the crushes you had, there was no other way to say it. But,
yeah, but can I know this is your show and you do the interviewing. Can I ask you what your favorite musical is, though?
The Music Man.
Oh, I love that one.
Old school.
Yeah.
Old school.
Yeah.
I just think it was so ahead of its time in terms of like how it structured itself mm-hmm. and the songs blending together hearing a song and having no idea that later on in the musical someone else's song will end up melding with that other song. I just think that was so genius.
Oh yeah.
It seemed like there was just like really really creative stuff going on.
The opening number and the opening number on the train and
exactly.
You Got Trouble. Those are two iconic super weird songs but became part of the canon of Broadway.
Yeah, they went some weird places, mm-hmm. and I love it. So yeah, that would be it for me. Okay, now back to you and MASH.
Okay.
I'm gonna get I'm going to get this category out of the way because I'm going to eat dinner when we get off the phone. So I'm thinking about food. Three foods that in this MASH universe are not only not bad for you, but in fact, they're good for you. And you can have them at the snap of a finger. It can be as specific as, you know, a very special cookie that you had someplace, or it can just be pizza, you know, foods that do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Three.
One is the... When you said cookies, it made me think of it. The chocolate chip cookies backstage at Disneyland before they switched over to a different company. When I first started Disneyland, they backstage in the commissary, they had these chocolate chip cookies that were like muffin tops. They were big and dense and they were like cakes. And they are still to this day the greatest chocolate chip cookie I've ever eaten in my life.
Oh, what a great answer.
Yeah.
Good luck with your other two, because that's really tough to beat.
My second is my favorite meal from childhood that my mom would always make for us, which was baked chicken tenders, but breaded, like, because we didn't have a deep fryer. So you would get like the frozen chicken tenders and put them in the oven. French cut Green Giant green beans from the can.
Great.
Velveeta shells and cheese. So that as a meal.
Yeah.
That was my other favorite growing up. And and I think my third is a Lou Malnati, not Lou Malnati's. Lou Malnati's or Gino's or Chicago's pizza. A Lou Malnati's deep dish Chicago pizza, because that is what we lived on in Chicago, and it is the most delicious thing. I know a lot of people argue whether or not it's pizza or just a tomato pie, but to me, it was my 4 years of college in Chicago, and I gained 50 pounds eating them.
I bet. It's tough when the thing that becomes your favorite food when you're that age is like, you're like, but it's my favorite food. How can I not eat it all the time? What do you mean it's not good for me? Like, that's sort of a thing that's very not understandable at a certain time in life, I think.
But you know what, though? It's still not understandable for me right now. And I realized this the other day as I walked past the little deli on my block. And I was like, you know, and I was like, I want to go in here and get a cookie. I was like, I'm going to have a cookie today. And I went in and I bought myself a cookie. I love cookies, if you haven't noticed. I went in and I bought myself a cookie.
I love cookies too.
And I started thinking to myself, you know, I'm an adult now. Cookies should be a sometimes food, as Cookie Monster now tells children on the show.
That's right.
And I realized when I did this, I was like, yeah, cookies should be a sometime food. Then why is this cookie that I just bought like the ninth day in a row of buying a cookie? Like, just because I can eat whatever I want as an adult doesn't mean I should just be eating. And it's the big cookie, too. It's not like a little, like I'm having one Oreo out of the sleeve. Like, this is a cookie that gets its own packaging.
Yeah.
And individually.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't bother me with one Oreo. I don't have time for that.
No, nobody does.
I need all or nothing.
Real quick.
No, I get it.
About Oreos. Yeah. This is a dumb thing that I did once with Oreos that I loved. I took a sleeve of Oreos, put them in a bowl, poured milk over the top, grabbed a wooden spoon, and ate it like cereal in front of cartoons.
Oh,
yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely. Feels like a no-brainer.
Right.
Feels like a no-brainer. I don't know why I never did that. I love it. And I basically was doing the same thing where, like, anything that you could make as a Rice Krispie treat that wasn't a Rice Krispie, that would be something like that. It would be like, well, why don't I just put a bunch of Oreos in this melted marshmallow and just eat that instead? Like, that seems logical.
Melted marshmallow was just food glue that cooled off into Rice Krispie treats. You could put anything in it.
It's just food glue. Yeah. Yeah, chill out. It's just food glue, guys. Yeah. Amazing. Okay, let's do, because you said Cookie Monster and advice, that reminded me of this this idea of maybe you having a fictional best buddy, or like a fictional buddy who is you know, comes from the sort of make-believe world and on some level. So it could be Luke Skywalker, it could be Cookie Monster, it could be Batman.
But one that's actually in some canon somewhere.
Three people... Or animals or whatever that are like your buddy that you get to hang around with.
Ooh. Oh, that's so good. Quasimodo from the Disney Hunchback movie.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Because he was just so kind. I liked him a lot. And he could sing really well. So he would be one. I guess they all will be kind of encouragey. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. But that's what you,
sure,
that's what
why
you
not?
Want in an imaginary friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Danny Zuko.
Oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I love it.
Danny Zuko from Greece.
I love it.
I feel like I need to have one sort of anthropomorphic animal in there.
Yeah, I would like that. I'd like to see that.
can it be, because this was maybe my biggest influence as a child and the reason that I got into theater, can it just be all of the Muppets?
Oh, sure. Okay. Let's just give you all the Muppets. Okay. Why not?
But if I had to pick one, it would be Fozzie.
Why not? Yeah. Okay, I'm putting Fozzie in parentheses to remind myself, but I mean, I agree with you that I would want all of the Muppets too. So great choice. let's do three places that you would have a vacation home if traveling to get to them weren't a pain in the butt. This sort of in our world, you're magically transported there. Three real places on Earth that it would be fun to have a vacation home.
Okay. I haven't really seen terribly much of the Earth, unfortunately.
It can be a place you think you know you would like, even if you haven't been there yet.
Right.
You could really just go for it if you wanted to.
I would like to have – the one is I drove up the coast with my dad once and my brother, and we saw this house on a jetty in Rockport, Massachusetts, a very small town, but a beautiful house out on a jetty. And all three of us –
I love how specific this is.
Said – If I could buy that house, I would. Like each of us would have individually bought that house.
That is what this game is for.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I love that you were able to pull that.
That one was pretty amazing.
Two more. Yeah.
I would. Huh. I don't know Italy, but I know I'm going to love it.
Oh, hell yeah.
Right? But I'm a city fan, so I think, like, somewhere just outside of Rome. I don't know what that even means.
Yep.
But, like, I'd like to be able to go into the city and enjoy things, but there's something about that, like, beautiful, pastoral image of Italian hillsides that I really, really like. But I don't like to be too isolated from things.
Absolutely. Gorgeous.
If it wasn't a pain to get there, I would love to have a home in New Zealand. I loved Wellington, New Zealand so much.
I knew you were going to say that, right? Wellington
is one of the world's
greatest
cities.
I hoped that you would say.
Yeah.
So great.
Yeah.
So great. Okay, listen.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
No, I was just going to go on and about Wellington.
No, you can wax rhapsodic about it. I love it too.
Wellington to me it's a crescent shaped city in a bay. So the maritime life there, I love living and being on the water. The maritime life there is really fun. But also, I don't know if you noticed this when we were there, the ethnic neighborhoods in Wellington are so specific that Wellington feels like Epcot to me. Like, there's this little Mexican, Mexican area, and there's, like, piñatas hanging up in the streets, and the houses are all brightly colored. And then there's a Chinese area where it's this crazy food market where there's just a million smells coming through. And all of those different neighborhoods have those different feels, and I loved that.
Yeah, I do, too. I really, really loved it. Ugh, I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, I got to get this out of the way. I love your girlfriend, and I mean
her
no disrespect, but this is a MASH game. MASH game rules are I need you to give me three ladies.
Mm-hmm.
It could be for casual, sexy, fun times. It could be for, like, alternate universe wife. It could be anyone from history. It could be anyone from fiction. It doesn't have to be, you know, it could be, like, Molly Ringwald from 16 Candles. Or, you know, it could
right.
be... Sophia Loren from 1950, you know, anything like that. The sky's the limit. Three.
Does it make me sound terribly old fashioned to say Donna Reed from It's a Wonderful Life specifically that character.
No, I think that's Darling. I think that's Darling.
As a that's a good that's a good like that's the alternate universe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Natalie Portman, I've always had a huge crush on. Not only because I think she's beautiful,
understandable,
but also because she's a very, Harvard very grad.
Yes, like, yes, that, smart young lady.
Yeah, that to me is because you know attraction is a thing, but also I would love to just talk to her every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's two, and then I'm going to say Nicole Eggert from the Charles in Charge years, because why not? I stared at that poster on my wall every day for my entire youth.
Who can blame you?
Yeah.
Who can blame you? Charles in Charge of our days and our nights.
Yeah.
Charles in Charge of our wrongs and our rights. I want Charles in Charge of me. I liked the whole sort of like... The whole kind of awkwardness of like he lives under our roof and he's the boss of me, but I have a crush on him mm-hmm. that Josie Davis's character had going on
yes.
was like just dangerous enough that I was like, listen, I really get it. I really get
yeah.
it.
This is my Mormon fantastic. Scandal life.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's absolutely right. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. Let's do three. Let's do you wake up tomorrow and you've downloaded Matrix style, like three skills that you wish you could sort of wake up and, you know, and you're like, I know Kung Fu, basically. Mm-hmm.
I would like to be able to sight read music on the piano.
Nice.
So I could play any song put in front of me. Or you know what? I would like to be able to sight and just by ear play any music. So if someone said this yeah. song, I would love to be able to just sit down and play it.
Great. Great, great, great.
I would love to be able to stand anywhere on a football field and kick the ball through the uprights.
Wonderful.
Because there's a rule against roughing the kicker, and I love football.
Great. Great.
And, like, do these all need to be, like, within the realm of possibility, or can they be supernatural?
Opposed to, like, a superhero role? I'm going to go with within the realm of possibility.
All right. So, the world's best kicker, then, because from any point on a field,
yeah,
that's...
Yeah,
there,
yeah.
People would think there was funny
yeah.
business.
Oh, yeah.
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 And then I think I would like to wake up knowing all of the world's languages.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Fantastic use of this category on all counts.
Oh, good.
Gags.
Thanks.
Fantastic. yeah. Yeah. Don't worry. You're doing great.
I'm so nervous. This is the part I was the most nervous about.
Oh, boy. Well, I think you're doing wonderfully.
Oh, thanks.
Now, listen, I just had a thought that I have never done before.
Uh-huh.
Not really. Maybe I've done some version of this, but nothing quite like this. Let's say you have to be... Give me a list of three women
mm-hmm.
that it would be like you spend like not just a day in the life, but like a few days in the life of an iconic woman. And it could be from any era.
Okay. Edith Wilson, I've become obsessed with, who was Woodrow Wilson's wife. And after he had a stroke, was the first female president of the United States, but had to hide it from the world. And
yeah,
still
amazing.
Pretend that he was running things.
Great choice.
So I would like to spend time with her post. It's terrible to say, but after his stroke.
Yeah, that's great.
That would be a really fun one. I would love to meet Abigail Adams. This two first ladies, I realize.
Well, you're gonna be Abigail Adams. You understand?
I am.
Yeah, I'm turning
oh,
you into
I get
these
to
women.
Be
these
this.
Are three,
oh, I thought this
three
was...
women that you're living a day in the life as them.
Oh, I thought this was living a day in the life with them.
No,
them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that may change the first one because I don't want to be the president.
I'm glad we were able to address how amazing Edith Wilson was, though, even if you don't want to be
Yeah, her. She's fantastic and amazing and the best. Gosh, oh, this, if I could be any woman from history. Let me think.
Yeah, three. Or it could just be like, listen, I love Meryl Streep. I would want to be Meryl Streep and see and feel what it would feel like for a few days to be like beloved and have this great family life. And you know what I mean?
If we can go with people that are currently alive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, Carol Burnett.
I just wanted to widen it out. Great.
I would love to have a week as Carol Burnett back in the day when she was just given complete free reign of it was like, hey, here's a big empty television studio and an audience. Do whatever you want.
Great. Love
that.
That
was
agreed.
That was a sort of epic time.
Wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah. I'm going to stick with Edith Wilson.
Great.
Yeah, you know what? Because I don't want to disparage Edith Wilson like that and take her off of the, like, I really like you, but I wouldn't want to be you. Right. You're a nice vacation, but I wouldn't want to live there. No, screw that. I'll live there for a few days.
Great. I'm proud of you.
Thanks. and gosh, I don't know a third. Like maybe a great female athlete just to feel like Billie Jean King.
Ooh, that's
to
great.
Feel what it's like to be a world class athlete.
I think that's great.
And Billie Jean King's a super badass also.
I think that's great. Yeah, I would pick being Billie Jean King for a week. I think that'd be fantastic. Okay, great. Okay, and then final one. I'm gonna take myself on a little twist. Wasn't necessarily planning on this one with you because we didn't talk about movies that much.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm gonna say three sort of movie styles or directorial styles that it would be fun to kind of have your life be, even just for a day, sort of mapped out by. So it would be like, oh, for one day, everyone behaves as people do in like a Quentin Tarantino movie, or everyone, or
oh, that'd be terrifying.
Sort of like moody, weird David Lynch for a day. I know I'm picking really weird ones that probably no one would feel comfortable with, but
right. I would love for my life to be like, this is kind of a weird one, but just because I love his movies, the director John Turteltaub.
Mm-hmm.
Who did the National Treasure movies and Disney's The Kid.
Oh, yeah.
His worlds are just filled with adventure and fun.
Yeah,
and
absolutely. Fast-paced, silliness, surprises.
You learn something about yourself by the end.
A world in which there's a map on the Constitution.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, the world that has that as a thing.
I think that's a great choice.
I really like him.
Two more.
I would love to, I'm terrible with directors, I guess. Jim Henson, of course.
Great.
I would love to live in the world where I could go to Broadway and see the Muppets take Manhattan or be with the Muppets as they are taking Manhattan on that big Broadway stage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And
it can be a style too. If you don't want to name a specific director, you could be like, well, what, you know, to have sort of a musical life or, you know, like a Western or.
I was just going to say a Western. I would love to live in like one of those spaghetti Westerns from the 60s and 70s that, or even like, maybe not the gritty ones, like the super gritty 90s, like Clint Eastwood Westerns. Cause I'm like, things seem a lot dirtier there. Like.
They really.
I like
the
Western where, you know, everybody's hair still looks nice.
Everyone's teeth are still white.
Your teeth are still white. Your hair looks nice. You took a shower that morning. You put on the brightly colored bandana and then you went. But I wouldn't want to be like a gunfighter. I would want to be the saloon keeper.
Yeah.
Or the piano player because I would have that skill where I could just play any song in the world.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh, listen, you would be so beloved in that world.
Right.
They'd be like, I had a tough day out on the range, but I came in and had my sarsaparilla.
Yeah.
And Gags was playing some songs.
Blung, 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 blung. I never wrote a song for you, but I told.
Oh, God, that's wonderful. Okay, I'm going to do this little quick thing where I say, tell me when to stop.
Okay. Stop.
And you have to tell me when to stop. Okay. All right. Can you, I'm going to say, what I'm going to do is say 1, 2, 3, pause. Can you pause your recording easily so mm-hmm. that I can just do this real quick and that it, to the listener, it will seem as if no time has passed
yeah.
and we'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
Now we're going.
Okay. Are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. All right. Listen, this is great. I'm feeling really good about it. And I think you will too.
Okay.
Number one, I want to congratulate you on your beautiful vacation house in Rockport, Massachusetts. You got the house on the jetty.
Oh,
you got
good.
The house on the jetty.
Oh, so excited.
That's very exciting. It's very exciting. It's the kind of place that you want your buddies, the Muppets, to stop by.
Yes.
It's the kind of house that you want to come home to after you've had a crazy fun day in a John Turteltaub-esque world.
Yes.
It's the house you want to come home to after you dip into the world of Rent, whenever you feel like you want to kind of live in a different land for mm-hmm. a little while.
Yeah.
And by the way, your ability to play anything by sight or ear musically is really going to come in handy in this musical Rent world that you live in
good.
From time to time. But if for some reason someone's like, hey, what, I know you're a great musician, but like, what else? You can be like, you know what? Let me just pop in to Billie Jean King's body for a few days and feel what it feels like to be a world-class athlete.
Oh,
a total
man.
Badass.
It's the best workout, too.
Well, speaking of workouts, mm-hmm. you're going to really work up your appetite. And I want you to know that you have unlimited access with zero health ramifications to the Disneyland cookies.
Oh, thank God. It's all I'm going to eat.
I know. I'm really excited for you. And you know the Muppets are going to be pigging out on those with you.
Oh, yeah. There is a Muppet whose name is Cookie Monster.
I mean, enough said. And then you're the person that you ended up with sharing all of this. Is none other than Nicole Eggert from Charles in Charge.
Oh, Charles in Charge era Nicole Eggert.
Oh, wonderful. That poster has come to life. Pretty crazy. Crazy.
I'm so happy because she's got this loose braid that's just beautiful.
Oh, sure, yeah. Sure. The loose French braid. I know exactly what you're talking
and
about.
And I think it's
I know
also
exactly what you're talking about.
Where I became obsessed with eyelet clothing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure, sure, sure. I mean, I didn't know you were obsessed with it, but I'm pleased to know that now.
obsessed was a really strong term that I don't know why I picked that word.
So let's all send Mark some eyelet clothing for him to wear. I don't know how that's going to work out, but you can be heard on We Got This. That is a wonderful podcast. I hope to one day do it, and I strongly encourage people who have not listened to it to listen to it. I have a feeling if you already know who Mark is, you probably are listening to it, but if you are not from the Thrilling Adventure Hour world as much, you need to get into that. You need to get into We Got This. And would you like to tell people where they can find you online?
Yeah, I'm at Mark Gags on Twitter and Instagram, and that's pretty much what I use for everything.
At Mark Gags. It mm-hmm. doesn't get any easier than that.
Right.
Now, I do have one final piece of business that I need to address with you.
Okay.
I wish we were in the same room for this because it's one of my favorite parts of A Boys of Summer, but I do need you to sing a snippet of Don Henley's Boys of Summer to take us out on the podcast.
Ooh. I don't know how it goes.
You don't know that song at all?
No. Can I quickly, can we hit that, do that hit stop thing again and I'll listen to it real quick? Or remind
yes,
me how it
can.
Goes? I may know
well,
it.
Well, it's kind of like, it's like the chorus is like, I can see you, your brown skin shining in the sun. You got some baby. You know it?
I don't. I vaguely, no, I can see you. Dun, 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 dun. Is it the one that, it's not the one that ends in Sultans of Swing. That's a different song, right?
You know what? I'm going to accept that. I'm going to accept that
man,
your Boys
feel
of
like
Summer
I,
turned
I did
into
okay
the
this whole time. I did okay this whole time, and I failed so miserably at the end.
That is not, it's not a test. I think from now on, maybe the lyric should just be, I can tell you my love for you will still be strong because we are the Sultans of Swing. Oh, Gags. Thank you so much for doing the podcast.
It has been such a pleasure.
I hope to get a hug from you in person. ASAP. I'll be in New York for Comic-Con, so that's October, but that seems like a long way away. Are you coming to LA anytime soon?
I will be in LA for One Starry Night at the Pasadena Playhouse, a benefit to raise money for ALS on August 15th. So I'll be there that week.
Listen to that. Well, guys, that's an opportunity for you to support what a great show that's going to be.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun show. And I am going to see you when I come there, but and give you a real hug. And also, Hal and I have to have you on our show. Of course. Of course. And in the meantime, I'm enjoying this audio hug.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I am to please. All right, guys. Talk to you next time on the podcast. And thanks again, Kex.
Bye.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.